Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationship Talks. I am your host, Laurie Brooke, and together we will get to take a look at what goes on behind closed doors. Today, I'm joined by Shailene Kite.
Hi, my name is Shailene Kite, and I'm here to talk about relationships with therapists and their clients.
Shailene Kite is a licensed counselor, a yoga teacher, group practice owner, and mental health educator. She is also the host of the Tea Talk podcast and consult, where she shares the therapy tea. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Relationship Talks. As you would have heard from the introduction, I'm here with Shailene. Thank you so much for joining me, Shailene.
Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. It's a really interesting topic that we're going to be talking about today because we don't have anyone who has spoken about relationships between therapists and clients. And it's one of those areas where we often encourage people to go and see a therapist and to go and get help in whatever area that it is that they need. But you don't want that relationship to cross the line.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about your story. What brings you here in front of me today?
Sure. So in terms of getting into the field of mental health, I wanted to be a therapist when I was about, middle school age. I was mandated by my family to go to therapy as a teenager. I had to go to family therapy because my parents were getting divorced. And I don't remember much about it other than the therapist was so kind. And I just remember having this mind-blowing epiphany where I thought, oh, you can go talk to someone and they'll listen to you. And as a teenager, I think it's hard to find that, like, here's this adult person who will sit and listen to me. And so, yeah, since then I've stuck with it and I can't imagine myself doing anything else, even though I do a little bit of other things, like the center of everything is around mental health and therapy. And so I just want to help as many people as possible. And I think like the relationship between a client and therapist, unfortunately, there are times where the line can be crossed and that's the same in any profession that's supposed to be a helping one, teachers, doctors, all of these other things, because at the core of everything, humans are humans. And so, we're fallible. But I think the other side of it that's really beautiful is that the relationship between client and therapist, it's one that's very vulnerable. And the relationship, this is something that's very specific about therapy, is that the relationship is like one of the main ingredients to helping somebody heal. And so it's hard because, number one, I think it's just not something that people talk about very often, but there's also, there's ethical boards and there's things like that, but there's no exact right or wrong way to do a lot of things. And so just like anything else, the relationship can be harmful, but it can also be really, really helpful and a part of someone's healing journey, whatever that might look like.
So let's start with the positive side of things. What does a healthy relationship between a therapist and client look like?
Think healthy would look like the person who's coming to therapy feels comfortable in sharing things with their therapist. Myself, as someone who's been and continues to be in therapy, I sometimes have things that I wouldn't want to share with my therapist. And that doesn't mean that she's a bad therapist, but I've had previous therapists. And I might think to myself, oh, that's something I would share with Dr. Kim, but I wouldn't share with Karen, we can't necessarily control all of those factors, but I would say if you don't feel comfortable sharing, the main issues that have brought you into therapy with your therapist, that's problematic because it's going to be really hard for the person to get what they need out of it. So I think the probably the biggest thing is feeling safe enough in their presence to not be judged and to be able to be vulnerable about whatever wounds or scars are trying to get healed in therapy.
And does that come down to the rapport? The building that rapport with the clients at the start in terms of creating that feeling of safety and vulnerability?
Yeah, I think it's something that can get oversimplified or overgeneralized. In therapy, we use the word rapport from the side of the therapist. And so rapport building is something that's necessary, but I think it's really easy for that to fall into like jargony terms, like, oh, we're building rapport. What does that actually translate to? That translates to both of you getting to know one another, for the client to get to know what the therapist style is, for the therapist to really understand what the client's been through, what they're coming from, how they can be helpful to them. I think that's something that doesn't really get talked much about or doesn't get talked enough about in the therapy space, is like, what behaviors can the client do to increase their chances of success in therapy? What behaviors are likely to decrease their success in therapy in terms of the relationship specifically? So like a quick example might be if I have someone who is calling me all of the time outside of therapy and it's really burning me out, I think that it's really important that therapists are able to really like orient clients like, hey, here's what you can expect from me. Here's when I'm going to pick up the phone. Here's what I'm capable of. Here's what's a little bit too much. Like let them know what their limits are just so they know what to expect. And as a trauma provider, I think that that's something that whether you're a therapist, a doctor, whatever, like just letting people know, hey, here's what you can expect from me is something that often kind of gets missed. So those are the first things that come to mind.
Yeah, so really setting those boundaries and making sure that I think it's if you can create those boundaries, then it's easy for everyone to understand, well, they're not just ignoring me or they're not just answering me when they think, you know, it's beneficial to them, but it's because they have other commitments on or this is when I can expect them to be working. How do you find though with clients who you create those boundaries, but or they feel like they need that little bit more? How do you cater to those people?
Well, I mean, some people will need more and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with them. And there's also nothing wrong with me if I can't meet those. You know, I'm a mom, I'm a business owner. I've got a lot on my plate. And so both of us are not wrong for having those different needs. And for myself, I think it's just really important to be genuine with people and not focus so much on being nice. I mean, even saying it out loud, I have this like, oh, what are people going to think when they hear that? But it's true. And even with the calling piece, I myself have gone to doctors who have had, you know, 5-minute appointments with me. And they say, if you need anything, call me. And I'm like, call you where? Like, you didn't give me your number. You didn't tell me when to call. I don't think you really mean that, you know? And so for clients, I want to normalize being able to talk about things like limits and boundaries because I want them to know it's a normal part of being in a relationship. Like if I can't tell you what I need from you to stay in this relationship and I can't hear what you have to tell me, then our relationship is doomed. And the relationship with therapist and client is not like, it's not, what's the word? It's fair game, just like any other relationship. It's not, I don't know what the word invincible to that. I don't know what word I'm looking for, but then it's just like any other relationship. And so we can't talk openly about those things. Hey, I know you need me after 9 o'clock. And I have to tell you, I'm really not going to be available because I have to put my kid to bed and then I'm exhausted. And I have to get up and do it all. So we need to find another way to meet that need that doesn't involve me. And so, you know, can we come up with some sort of other plan? Because to say anything otherwise is kind of like invalidating, like, you don't really need that, or I should be available, or you should call me after that time when it doesn't really address, but there's some sort of a need there. And you're not wrong for having the need, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to pretend that that need doesn't exist by not right. just picking up the phone or not having the conversation about why I'm not available at that particular point in time. How do you decompress from those relationships and doing that work all day and then coming home and being mum?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I should be doing and then I'll tell you what I'm actually doing because I feel like, you know, this is why therapists need therapists and, you know, trainers need trainers and coaches need coaches and all these other things. I'm really great at giving out advice that I struggle to take. What I should be doing more of is having stronger boundaries. I'll go back to with my phone because as, you know, just in like today's world, it's so easy to be accessible way more through your phone. And so I would like to do a better job of, you know, either putting my phone off at a certain time or leaving it in another room, like at 4 o'clock or something like that, to give me the space to try to be more present with my roles, wishes, responsibilities, all of that stuff at home. One thing that I'm pretty consistent with is exercising. I'm pretty committed to that, thankfully. I think like a year ago, it would have been maybe like, here's what I should be doing. I should be exercising more because it helps me, but I'm very consistent with that. And whenever I can, I try and travel and go somewhere. So I think all of those things are, it's a spectrum, right? Like here's where I would like to be. Here's where I am.
I think there's always something that every person can say we're aspiring to, you know, there's always something we feel like we could be doing better in our lives.
Of course.
But understanding that that's also not a reason to beat ourselves up, that we are human at the end of the day.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I could always do better, but for now, those are my top ways. And going to concerts, I loved like the experience of just live music. I think there's an element of mindfulness in there that maybe isn't accessible for the person who has a really busy mind and struggles with meditation, but can feel really present and in the moment in front of certain experiences and with other people. So yeah, that's another one. But obviously I can't vacation, unfortunately, and go to concerts every day. So I'll exercise and try and be on my phone.
That's actually a really beautiful way, though, that you described live music, because it is one of those things that you can really get caught up in the moment and not actually realize what you're doing, because we're not lying down listening to that, you know, that meditation style music and thinking that we're not meditating.
Yeah, I think, you know, now that you say that, going back to your question about like, how do you know, what are the qualities of the therapist that are going to help you, you know that it's going to be successful? Or how do you build that rapport? I think therapists who are open to think of something in a different way, just like people, like if people are open to think of something in a different way, there's growth and there's space. So for myself, when I'm teaching, when I have people come to me and I think to myself, like, okay, this person, they really need to learn mindfulness. They need to learn how to meditate at some point. They need to be able to have more control over their thoughts. But if I try to get this person to sit down, who's telling me that their mind is racing 1,000 miles an hour, and I say, just sit down and breathe, that's not going to work for them. It's going to be really aversive. They might feel even more stressed out, and then they're not going to want to do it again. But if I can instead say, tell me about your favorite song and let's listen into it together. And let's just see what that's like for you. Like, tell me what that experience is like. It's different, but it's still hitting the same goal, right? Like, we're still thinking about just this one thing in this moment. And so people, but, you know, therapists in particular, like if we can think about something in the sense of, oh, you know, this is something a little bit different, or there's not only one way to solve this problem. I'm not the expert on your life. You coming into therapy, we're both here just trying to figure this out. Humility, I think that's like a key ingredient, not just with therapist relationships, but just with like collective healing in the world who has experienced so much trauma. Like, can we be open to seeing things in different ways?
Absolutely. So tell me, like, we've talked about the positive side of relationships with therapists. Let's move on to the negative. Where do those relationships start to blur?
It's interesting because I've never been asked this question and I've never thought of it in the way as negative. So I can speak to, in thinking about that, I think about like, what are experiences that are really hard for me and experiences that I think are really difficult for other therapists is this kind of relationship is one that's professional and it's, you know, a business. It's an exchange of information. There's an exchange of services there, but it's so personal and so intimate. Because you're learning sometimes the darkest parts of people and you're sitting with them in some of the darkest times of their life, sometimes for a very long time. And so the hard part is I can go downstairs and work out, but I'm not really going to shake something terrible happening to a client or them struggling with something, or probably some of the hardest parts, particularly with the clients that I work with. Again, I specialize in trauma, but I also help clients who are struggling with suicidal thinking and self-harm. So probably some of the worst moments for me as a therapist in terms of the relationship are when somebody isn't answering the phone and I'm worried that they might be in danger. You just get so close to people and it's not something that you can turn off so easily. Like, it's a part of your life. And so you now start to not think of clients like your family members, but some of those same feelings might still come up. My team and I laugh sometimes when we're talking about, you know, did you have my client in your group this week? Because we do a lot of group work in the type of therapy that we do. So was my client in group this week? Oh, you know what? She came late. And we laugh that it's like, oh, that's my child. Like, oh, my child showed up late. My gosh, like, let me talk to her. And so you do, you take things really personally, and that is something that's really hard to separate, turn off, close the door on at the end of the day, because it is such a personal relationship.
So what can you do to overcome that?
Well, I hope that most people are not working in complete isolation, even if they're working privately in private practice and it's just them and their clients all day. I hope that people are getting what we call clinical supervision, talking to other colleagues about it. I'm very blessed to have more than one team who do that, so that way we can support one another therapist about it. You know, when it comes to the place of being problematic, that it's impacting your life, you know, daily, or it's impacting the work that you're doing with the client, this is another reason to have supervision, so you can have someone else point that out to you and come up with problem solving and options. But if there's ever anything that's impacting the client, you would want to refer them out elsewhere to somewhere where that problem isn't becoming an issue for them. I think it's important to know like who your people are, even in terms of clients. So some of my first experience in counseling was with adolescents and children at one point who had gone through a lot of trauma. And I just kind of learned like, that's not for me. It was incredibly hard for me to separate. I would have like nightmares about the kids. I had a really hard time. I don't know if it's funny, but at the time I thought it was funny because the office that I worked at, there were four therapists and I was one of them. And in order to have services put in place and have an insurance company reimburse for their services, they have to have a diagnosis. And I would like never diagnose kids because I always just blamed it on their families. And so my team would be like, Shailene, like you have, and I'm like, but did you see that their parents? Like, of course they can't focus. Like, it's terrible for them. It's like, it's funny and it's like sweet, but like, but at the other side is like these poor kids couldn't get services because I was always, you know, putting it. And so I just kind of learned like kids are not my population. And there are certain people who can do that work and they can do it great and they should. And there are people who say to me all the time, I don't know how you work with people who are suicidal or how you hold all that heavy. And I'm just like, it's my thing. Like, these are my people. These are who I can help. So I think it's really important to get some experience and just start to kind of dial in on who your people are so you know who you're best equipped to help. So it's like, on a good day, even if things are really stressful, I have enough support. I have my own self-care practice where I can put space and it's not consuming my life. And there are days here and there, or there might be periods where burnout feels really high and I need to change something. But for most of the time, that's not the case. And if it is, then I would say, you know, maybe there's a problem that needs a little bit more investigation.
I think that was a really important point that you made there in terms of you don't have to be everything to everyone.
It is okay
to help just those people that you can help and allow other people to work in their zone of genius, for want of a better term, and help the other group. You don't have to do it for everyone.
Yes. And I would say that's a red flag. If you're looking for a therapist and they do everything, check somebody else out. I mean, always check somebody else out. Like, always, you know, feel a person out to have a couple of sessions with them. I don't think it's a great idea to go from therapist to therapist to therapist, but you know, give it a little bit of time, date them, get to know what they're like, first couple, 3 to 4 sessions and see how it feels. But, you know, again, I keep going to the medical examples. If I were going to a doctor and they were saying, you know, I'm going there for, I've been having a wrist issue lately. So I'm going there for my wrist. And then I mentioned something about my teeth and they're like, oh, you know, I took a class and like, you would never entertain that. Right. And so if there's therapists who are like, yeah, I see you individually, I'll see you as a couple. Like, that's not, those lines get crossed. And so if you see somebody who's experienced everything or they know all of these different trainings and techniques, then what are they really specializing in order to help you? So definitely.
So tell me, have you ever had a client who's become, I suppose, codependent, or those codependency feelings have started to really show up in that relationship? And how have you dealt with that?
Yeah, I mean, so the type of therapy that I specialize in is DBT, and it stands for dialectical behavior therapy. It's an evidence-based practice for people who are struggling with suicidality, self-harm, and their core issue is emotion dysregulation. And so many people that fall under this category, I mean, really historically are women with borderline personality disorder, and borderline personality disorder gets a really, really terrible rap. There's a lot of negative stigma about that. Because historically, that diagnosis basically meant the woman is on the borderline of psychosis and neurosis, or like some, like literally meant like crazy women. And unfortunately, even though there has been more education that's been done about the diagnosis, there's still stigma around it. But when somebody truly knows the disorder, they know that if you take somebody who has borderline personality disorder, it's going to be really hard to find a lifetime or a story that came before that person that does not involve, in the very least or the most minimal sense, invalidation, like a lot of invalidation. And in the most extreme sense, it's a lot of abuse, trauma, neglect, abandonment. And so if growing up, particularly in my developmental years as a child, let's say, I grow up in a family that just doesn't accept me. They think I'm too emotional or I'm too much and nobody really gets me. But then to the extreme of that, you know, maybe I've been neglected or I wasn't taken care of. I now am growing up with deficits that were supposed to be like, if I think of it, like I have a bunch of cups and these cups are supposed to get filled as developmental markers along my life. And each marker is coming up with less and less in my cup, right? But I still inherently need those things. The need doesn't change. It doesn't go away. And so I think people who are struggling with codependency are really trying to get a need met that was missed at some other point. And it comes through in relationships. So relationships start to become a source of oxygen. And people also forget that humans are pack animals. We're not meant to be in isolation. We're meant to be in relationship with one another. And so when that's missing, and then think of it again, like if I'm growing up with all of these missing pieces, and then I go out there in the world and I'm trying to find it, I'm probably doing things that are pushing other people away, which makes me even more thirsty, starved, in need of oxygen. And so whenever it comes into my life, I just grab it and I squeeze it and I try to do whatever I can to hang on to it. And then people run away. Does that show up in therapy? Yeah, of course, especially when people have gone through experiences where they've gone without love, without anyone to show them what a healthy relationship looks like. And so the other thing that happens, unfortunately, for clients is like there are these, I call them crazy making experiences, where let's say you have someone who's gone through all of those things, right? And so to her people, to her family, maybe to like the medical community or wherever she went for help, they called her crazy, they called her codependent, they called her borderline. They said that she was too needy, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, therapists are firing her, nobody will take her, nobody can help her, it's all her. But then when she gets to my office and I'm talking to her about something like phone contact, like, hey, so here's when I expect to hear from you. Here's when I don't expect to hear from you. Like, you know, here's when you can expect to reach me, things like that. There's like a rupture there. There's like missing information, right? So even myself, I've had the experience of the doctor saying, go ahead and call me, right? So what happens to these people? Well, these people go through times where people say things like that. If you need anything, call me. And then they call. And then the person's like, well, this actually isn't appropriate. You should be calling the emergency services or, you know, it's really late. And I don't know why, you know, I was asleep when you called us. And so I think like we have a culture just in general that's very focused on being nice instead of being honest. And so for the people that are struggling with codependency or struggling with these relationship holes that they're trying to fill back up and trying to understand, the people who are asking more of them actually aren't modeling what they want from them, right? They're saying things like, if you need anything, call me. And I've seen it happen. It's funny. I see it happen with friends too, where they say something like, well, if you ever need me, call me. And then I'm like, did you mean that? And they're like, no. And I don't know why I said it. I was just feeling anxious. And I just talked to, oh my God, I need to stop that. Like, we really need to think about these things. And so it's no different in therapy. And so what do I do if any communication is becoming problematic? It's not easy. I'm talking about it like it is. It's not. It's still uncomfortable. I still want to be nice. I still don't want people to be upset with me. But I also have to realize and say, not just to clients, because this isn't limited to therapy clients, like people who are codependent and who don't have great boundaries, but I have to be able to say to them, listen, if we can't change this, we're not going to be able to be together. Even you as my therapy client, like we're not going to be able to stay together if this doesn't change. I'm really worried about it. And I know this is uncomfortable to talk about, but I'm asking that you stick in this with me, because if not, I'm worried that we're not going to be able to work together anymore. And I take that very seriously. And I think most people can appreciate it enough, because even though it's painful, it's not as painful as someone like ghosting you or not taking your calls anymore or firing you, you know?
That there is a real gem in that, in terms of it's, you don't want to be seen to be nasty or, you know, the bad person when you have those difficult conversations. But having those difficult conversations is being kind.
Right.
Because you're allowing everyone to see what the actual ground rules are or what your ground rules are.
Right.
And so you're not getting to that point where you then do start feeling, well, I can't pick up the phone, or I do have to ghost them, or whatever it is the case may be, because they keep crossing that line. And you're right, it's not limited to a therapist-client relationship. That's the same in any relationship that we have in life.
Right. Yeah.
From your perspective, and this is my last final question for you, what do you think the secret to a great healthy relationship is?
Oh, I feel my instinct, my default answer is what I feel like most people probably say to you, which is it's all about communication. That's not wrong. I just really don't like giving the same answer that everybody gives. So I'm going to go with, I think that the secret ingredient to a healthy relationship is awareness, self-awareness, right? Like if I can't recognize what things that I might be doing that contribute to tension, conflict, or the dissolving of a relationship, then, you know, what good does communication matter? If someone's communicating to me what they need from me, but I can't hear it, I can't reflect, I can't own up to what I'm doing. And this is something that's that I think in terms of the therapy that I specialize in DBT does really well of putting therapist and client on an equal playing field, in the sense of like things that interfere with therapy are not just limited to you. They're limited to me. Like it sucks for you when I go on vacation when I'm not around. That's really hard for you. It's inconsistent and it messes things up. I'm not going to go on vacation, but I do want to hear what you have to say about that. And I want to figure out if there's another way to meet the need. And in personal relationships, it's no different, right? Like my poor husband keeps telling me that I need to be on my phone less. And I hear him. He's communicating. He's doing what I ask, right? But if I can't reflect and action that out, if I can't actually make it a step, then, you know, what's the point of communicating in the first place? So I'd have to say the ability to reflect and have a reflect on yourself, your own behaviors, and have the awareness around what things am I doing that are enhancing this relationship or pulling from it. Nothing else is really going to matter.
That's a fantastic answer. Thank you so much.
I wanted it to be fantastic.
And you're right. Most people do say communication, but thank you so much for coming on today. It's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Relationship Talks. If you can, I'd love for you to jump on and leave a review. And whilst you are at it, don't forget to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please join me again next week. We get to take a look behind closed doors at someone else's relationship. But until then, I am your host, Laurie Book. And remember, the choice is yours. So make today and the week the very best of